and welcome to the Rick House. My name is Cyrus Farmer, and this is the Stomp the Tea podcast that you're listening to and watching. Folks, we have a lot to get through tonight, so let me just give you a rundown of what we're going to be discussing. We're going to be talking about the NFL championship games on the NFC and AFC sides. We'll also do a recap of the divisional round playoffs that occurred last weekend. Going to be talking about a piece of equipment that I received, actually that I bought for my golf game. I'm hoping it will improve my golf game, as lousy as it is. And of course, the ever popular, what are you drinking tonight? But first, before we get started, I do want to go into a couple thoughts on the latest week of TGL, the Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy sponsored golf league that has been airing on ESPN. Folks, I have to say, week three of the TGL, it featured the New York Golf Club. This time it consisted of Matthew Fitzpatrick, Ricky Fowler, and Cameron Young of Westchester County fame. And they were up against the Atlanta Drive Golf Club, which featured Justin Thomas, Billy Horschel, and Patrick Cantlay. Now, folks, I have to tell you, I've had some reservations about the TGL, but I do think conceptually it's a potentially fantastic product. But I will say this. The Atlanta Drive Golf Club team seemed to have the most personality of any of the teams that we've seen on the TGL aired on ESPN, which is a huge plus. I think Justin Thomas was great on the broadcast. Billy Horschel, I'm a Billy Horschel fan. I'm not sure how much personality he has, but he was all in on displaying whatever personality that he does have. And so I'm not against that. So that was a good thing. Patrick Cantlay is Patrick Cantlay. You can't, you know, be yourself, Patrick. I don't want you to be anybody else. Look, I only saw the last three holes of this latest match, which occurred, which was basically the singles version, which was the first time I'd seen the singles out of all three rounds of this. So I have to say a couple things right off the top of the head. New York Golf Club, can you show up every once in a while? A little bit? Apparently, the New York Golf Club has lost something like, this is not an exact figure, but something like 22 of 29 holes they've played in the TGL. Not competitive. The score of this latest round was 4-0, which is notable for a couple of reasons. Number one, the Atlanta Golf Club won, Atlanta Drive Golf Club won, and they did not use the quote-unquote hammer the entire match, which I think is maybe an interesting strategy moving forward. Who knows? I don't know. But maybe that's why the margin was what it was. 4-0 versus 15-2 or 8-1 or whatever the margins in the first 2 weeks were. They have to find a way, they being Tiger Woods and Rory and McIlroy, to make this new venture more competitive. It is very difficult to see this venture succeeding if they don't have a way to have more competitive matches week in and week out. There are blowouts in the NFL, basketball, of course, baseball. But generally speaking, what draws most people to sports is competitiveness, close matches, so on and so forth. So again, it's the third. It's not the end of the world. It's the third. It's the third match in the history of this league, this TGL. But I do think, and this one is was the closest 4-0, was the closest match they've had since they've started. But it was also the first shutout in the history of the TGL. New York Golf Club, you guys have to do a better job. I'm not here to down anybody. I'm a positive person by nature. But, you know, can you get on the board? Can you score some points? Ricky, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Cam Young, can you score? Please. So there's that. Now, I did a little research, and I want to relay some of these numbers to you. Apparently, the TGL on ESPN is carried exclusively by ESPN. It averaged about 1 million viewers the first 2 weeks of its airing. We don't know what the numbers were for this third week because it's too early for those stats to have been disseminated online. But 2 weeks, 1 million, essentially. It was like 920 in the first week and then like 1.1 million in the second week. So it averages out to about 1 million. That's a rating success for the TGL, believe it or not. I'm going to give you a metric to judge it by. The average Sunday of non-major PGA golf tournaments through the course of 2024 was about 2.2 million. So, 1 million on a Tuesday night in early January, mid-January, that's a good number. It outdrew or equaled NBA basketball games on TNT, as well as college basketball games on ESPN. So there's something there for TGL to build on if they can get some of these kinks worked out and if they can get to be a little bit more competitive. Again, blowouts aren't the end of the world. Shutouts aren't the end of the world. But at some point, you have to have a couple of close matches to kind of generate viewer interest, which may occur this coming Tuesday. If I have my information right, this will be the Jupiter Lynx Golf Club Tigers team versus the Boston Commons Golf Club, which is Rory's team. So that should certainly draw eyeballs to the set. We hope that it's a competitive match to boot. You know, I have to be honest. I'd like to see a little less banter between Matt Barry, who's kind of the play-by-play host from ESPN, and the players. Just leave the mic open with the players and let us hear what they're saying. You don't have to prove to us that you can talk to the players as a host. You know, I have the ability to ask them a question after they hit a bad shot or after they hit a great shot. You don't have to prove that to me. I know you have that capability, but it's not interesting to me as a viewer. I'd rather hear the players talk amongst themselves, to be perfectly honest. I mean, if you want to keep the interviews, that's fine. I'm not a huge Marty Smith fan. I think he's a little regional for my taste, even though he does college football and golf or the Golf Channel, the Golf Network and all of that stuff. I'm not sure that he's kind of the person you want doing interviews if you're trying to take a project global. David Faraday is probably like a better example of the kind of personality you would want if you're going to be doing interviews for members of the TGL in real time. But it is what it is. They have Marty Smith, and I have nothing against Marty Smith. Marty Smith is going to do what Marty Smith does. So, well, I don't know. I feel like at the end of the day, you're going to want to see these guys hit some shots under pressure. We know that there may or may not be issues with some of the calibrations on the simulator, which is fine. But you want to see a close match with both teams, A, on the board scoring-wise, and B, more importantly, having a chance to win in the last three or four holes, which we have yet to see with the TGL. So I'm hoping that will actually take place this coming Tuesday when Tiger meets Rory at the SoFi Arena in, I guess, West Palm Beach or wherever it takes place in Florida. Folks, I want to remind you always, don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to tell your friends, tell your enemies about this wonderful podcast, Stomp the Tea. We have an audio version as well. Obviously, we are on Spotify. We are on Apple Podcasts. We also have our YouTube video version of the show. And also, you can check us on all the socials, X, TikTok, Instagram, Threads, the whole nine. So spread the word. We will continue to bring you content each and every single week. Now, let's get into the show. Folks, before we get into the NFL championship weekend, I do want to talk about the divisional round that took place last weekend. Fun games, interesting games. I have to tell you, I really, really thought the whole weekend was, it had a lot to offer, right? There were expected wins, surprising upsets, tension-filled games, and disappointing results. Let's take the games in order, all right? Houston and Kansas City. I have to say, first and foremost, Kansas City doesn't get any more or less favorable calls from the referees than any other dynastic team that has competed in America for the last 100 years. I mean, they are on par, as far as I'm concerned, with Jordan's Bulls or Tom Brady's Patriots, Steph Curry's Warriors, Christian Leitner's Duke teams. I mean, if you are a good team, if you're a dynastic team, you are going to get calls. The problem is a great team, they don't need the help. So you'd rather see these teams, you know, kind of win or lose by their own efforts. And in some ways, obviously, it would be more interesting if they were not getting help, these great teams. But Kansas City is no different than any other great dynastic team or ball club in the history of sports in the United States. They get a lot of calls. Now, a lot of those calls were bad calls. I mean, the couple roughing the passer calls on Mahomes against the Texans were bad calls. They were just bad calls. But I'm not going to yell and scream about that because that's happened forever in any number of different sports. The point is, the great teams, they don't need the help. So, could some of these calls that are bad have helped these great teams win their games or their championships or their playoff efforts? Of course, without question. That's why we want to see the bad calls eliminated. But they're never going to go away. A great team is always going to get the benefit of the doubt, if not a thumb on the scale. So we just have to live with it. Kansas City's no different than any other team in that position. All that being said, I think the Texans played well on defense. They just didn't make enough plays on offense. Most of us knew that this game was going to be a heavy lift for the Texans to win, referees notwithstanding. But they didn't do enough on offense to actually win the game. So that happens. It's not the end of the world. We move on. Commanders, Lions, boy, oh boy. This was an unbelievable game, in my opinion. I have to tell you. We mentioned last week that the Lions might have trouble with the Commanders. In the same way I thought that the Denver Broncos would give the Bills trouble in their game a week prior. But boy, oh boy. I mean, I picked Detroit to win the game. I suspected that Washington would keep the game close. I did not know that they would be the best team on the field by a wide margin throughout the entire game, which they were. The Commanders are a handful. Their rookie quarterback is playing so well. And it's amazing. When I'm watching the game, I see these guys, the Commanders, they seem to have as many weapons on offense as the Detroit Lions do. And they are a very dynamic team at the skill position level, from McLaurin to Ertz to Robinson to Echols to, Brown, that's a team with some options, and that's a team with some weapons. They're only going to get better. It's amazing how much a quarterback, albeit the fact that he is a rookie, can make that much of a difference. Washington has some weapons on the offensive side of the ball, and that team and that rookie is only going to get better in years to come. So kudos to them. Congratulations to the Washington Commanders. They've done a great job. I wanted to mention something else also. Let's give a little love to Dan Quinn. Why do I say that? Dan Quinn wears his baseball cap backwards. Most people I know say that men or women of a certain age shouldn't wear quote-unquote caps backwards. That's for younger people or for kids. But to his credit, Dan Quinn has decided to, he refuses to let society's expectations of what an older man, let's say, how he should comport himself or how he should present himself to the world. He wears his hat backwards because he likes to wear it backwards. And that is, to me, emblematic of the whole culture of the Commander football team and that change that has taken place this past season. I mean, there are expectations about what a young quote-unquote team should consider success. And the Commanders are not playing ball with any of that. They're like, no, we're not trying to just make the playoffs. We're not trying to just win a game. We want to win the whole thing. Who knows if they will or not? Only time will tell. But they are not apologizing for being anywhere. They are actually trying to move forward. And I think Dan Quinn and the rest of the front office there deserves a lot of credit for that. So kudos to them. It was a great win. Congratulations. Washington completely went for it that entire game against Detroit. And they were rewarded with a spot in the NFC Championship game. Unbelievable, but kudos to them. Well done. Now, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time beating up on the Detroit Lions for their performance last weekend. Look, in some ways, it kind of felt like the injuries finally caught up to Detroit. Anyone can lose a game. Anyone can fall flat. Anyone can have a bad week. So that happens from time to time. It's when it happens that matters most. I have to say, I think someone was talking about, I don't know if it was on SiriusXM. Maybe it was, who was it? Peter Schrager? Maybe it was Schrager talking on Mad Dog Unleashed, talking about how the Week 18 game with the Vikings took a lot out of both the Lions and the Vikings. Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? I just know that Washington showed up and they looked ready to go and they looked awesome. I tend to think that Detroit had fewer bodies to play with because of all the injuries they've sustained, particularly on defense, throughout the second half of the season. So there's no shame in that. That's not the end of the world. The Lions, they made too many mistakes on both sides of the ball. Obviously, we know what happened on offense. You can't have that many turnovers and expect to win a playoff game. On defense, there were mental mistakes, there were physical mistakes, there were missed assignments. They just didn't play well. So sometimes it goes that way. All you can do is, pick yourself up and try it again next season. Unfortunately for the Lions. Now, Goff played well, Jared Goff. He played well for most of the season, but he did not play well when his team needed him most last weekend. It was one of his worst games of the year. It wasn't his worst game of the year, but one of his worst games of the year. Just bad timing on that. Now, as I like to say again, it's not the end of the world, but, sometimes you just have to believe in the body of the work that Jared Goff presented during the course of the season and move forward from there. Like I say, anyone can have a bad week or a bad game. Doesn't mean that he's a bad player, necessarily. But I can do with a few less Jared Goff chants when I'm walking around Detroit, which, again, most of you guys who listen to and watch the show know that I was in Detroit in the fall and loved my time there. It was awesome. But can we save the Jared Goff chants from now on, moving forward, until the Lions get to the Super Bowl? Look, it feels like Detroit kind of like, I don't know, it felt like they thought this season was kind of an all or nothing season because, they're going to lose both of their coordinators in all likelihood this year. Guys, that's the wrong way, guys, what I'm saying. People of Detroit, fans of the Lions, that is the wrong way to look at it. Winning is a process sometimes. I mean, and it doesn't happen overnight. You ask Baltimore if they feel like their chance of winning a championship is over. Ask Buffalo. Ask Cincinnati. Ask the San Francisco 49ers, who've been to two Super Bowls. Winning doesn't necessarily happen overnight as much as you want it to and as talented as you may be. So don't worry about this year and the performance that happened in the playoffs. It's over. This season is over for the Lions. Focus on next year. Teddy Bruschi, I believe, said that windows in the NFL can close quickly. And that is true. But that's not always the case. again, Baltimore, Buffalo, San Francisco, Cincinnati. I don't think anyone thinks any of those four teams can never win a championship. You just have to be patient. You got to, you know, deal with what comes your way. I mean, I know you lost both of your coordinators, Detroit, but guess what? So did the Philadelphia Eagles 2 years ago. And the Eagles are on the precipice of going to another Super Bowl if they win this coming Sunday. So it's not necessarily a death sentence. Keep your head up. Shake it off. It wasn't fun. No one likes losing. But Detroit, it's not the end of the world. This might have been one of the stepping stones that you needed to achieve your ultimate goal, which is getting to and winning the Super Bowl. It just didn't happen this year. So you got to take the bitter with the sweet. Next game, Rams-Eagles. Boy, oh boy, was this a tension-filled game, in my opinion. Look, the Rams played great. I thought the snow was going to be fluffier. I thought it was going to play even more of a factor than it did. And the only reason I say I thought it was going to play more of a factor, because the Rams threw the ball, I think, as well in the snow as they did before the snow arrived. And it was kind of a wet snow. It wasn't like a fluffy flaked snow. It was more hail mixed with a small snowflake snow. Kind of sloppy, not necessarily light, definitely on the heavier side. The conditions, especially with the cold, were not fun to play in. I got to tell you, I shoveled my driveway several times. I shoveled the driveway before the game, at halftime, after the game, and at halftime, Baltimore Bills, just to kind of keep up with the accumulation that was occurring. So, I mean, it could not have been fun to be out there on that field. Now, the Rams defense, they're young. They were very, very dynamic, and they have a bright future. They're only going to get better. The Rams offense, a little long in the tooth, but especially Stafford and Cooper Kupp. But, and who knows if either of those guys are going to be back. But Puka Nacua is the real deal. He's legit. And so is Kyren Williams. I like Kyren Williams a lot. If he can ever hang on to the ball, he only seems to fumble against the Eagles. Who knows if that's going to be a problem moving forward or not. I will say this. The Rams, they can feel good about what they did. But this whole narrative about the Eagles kind of being lucky or not being as dominant as they should have been, to me, is just it's completely a false narrative. Look, the Eagles did what they did. They won the game. Saquon Barkley was and continues to be tremendous. The Eagles don't need to be, quote-unquote, dominant to get to the Super Bowl. You know, Bo Wolf, who is he's a writer, and he has a podcast on the PHLY podcast on that network. He mentioned that if Saquon had stayed with the Giants, we probably would have never known the level of greatness that he had within him as a football player. And I think that's largely true. I mean, we saw part of that his rookie year as a Giant, but that could have been a one-off. It is amazing to watch Saquon in full bloom, as they say. He has been a joy to watch and a real difference maker. And it just goes to show you, Bo Wolf made a great point. It just goes to show you that fit and environment matter, regardless of the industry, whether it's football or law or medicine. I mean, you could be a fantastic visionary architect, but if you're with the wrong firm, the world may never know how talented you are. And I think we're seeing that with Saquon Barkley joining the Eagles. So kudos to Bo Wolf. Excellent point. I completely agree wholeheartedly. Now, Jalen Carter, of course, and that Eagle defense have been stalwarts, and they have continued to get the job done. Excuse me. I hope Quinyon Mitchell is healthy for the game against Washington coming up. I think we need him. I'm not a huge Isaiah Rodgers fan. As much as he's really kind of been pressed into duty here and there, I would rather see, obviously, Quinyon Mitchell out there, the rookie. So we talked a little bit about the Eagles and them not being quote unquote dominant, or whether or not they were lucky to win the game. Look, I could care less whether or not Jalen Hurts passes for 300 yards in a playoff game. All I want him to do is win the game. That's really all that matters as far as I'm concerned. I mean, whether or not the Eagles are dominant, who cares? I mean, that's not the point. Think about, I want you to think about a couple of teams in history, right? Think about the greatest show on turf. Remember the then St. Louis Rams? Marshall Faulk, Kurt Warner, obviously, Isaac Bruce, the whole nine, da-da-da-da-da-da. They were game wreckers that entire season. I think it was 1999 when they played their first Super Bowl. They met the Titans in their Super Bowl. And what was largely a boring game to me, the Rams won and validated their entire season, but they didn't look like they looked throughout the regular season. They were in a close game in that Super Bowl, and they won it. I'll give you another example. Kansas City Chiefs. Do you remember the Chiefs, their first season with Patrick Mahomes being their quarterback when they went on their Super Bowl run to play the 49ers? They were a big play waiting to happen every single week. And what happened? They were down, I believe, in the fourth quarter to Jimmy G and the 49ers, but ended up making a couple plays late to win that Super Bowl. So to me, it doesn't matter how you look when you win the game, as long as you win the game. And that's what Jalen Hurts and the Philadelphia Eagles have done this whole playoff season. So I'm not worried about that. The Eagles will continue to be a tough out. The final game of the divisional round playoffs was Ravens-Bills. Now, folks, I have to tell you, it was an interesting game, but it wasn't quite as compelling as I thought it would be. That's largely because of the mistakes that Baltimore made, especially in the first half, but definitely throughout the entire game. The Bills did everything they needed to do to win the game. Allen played great. Josh Allen, he played very well, even though his numbers didn't reflect it. He did everything they needed to do. He made every play they needed him to make when they needed him to make it. So kudos to him and kudos to them. But that being said, as well as Buffalo played, quote unquote, they were still a Mark Andrews catch away from going to overtime in that game. Now, let's talk about the elephant in the room, Lamar Jackson. Look, the weird thing about Lamar is that he wasn't the reason the Ravens lost that game. I mean, there were drops in the game. There was Mark Andrews in the game. There were coaching decisions in the game. All of that contributed to Baltimore losing that game. But the strange thing is, in my opinion, Lamar might have been the reason the Ravens didn't win the game, which is strange. He wasn't responsible for them losing the game, but he might have been responsible for them not winning the game because of the two turnovers he had in the first half. Now, Lamar put his team in a position to win the game, obviously. But his early miscues, I think, prevented the Ravens from getting into a rhythm offensively. And you could see when the Ravens were kind of clicking on and off, sputteringly throughout the entire game, they were a handful. I mean, they were, in my opinion, the better team versus Buffalo. But they didn't play like the better team. Buffalo played really, really well and deserved to win, to be fair. But it was strange. In some ways, Lamar's performance kind of reminded me a little bit of Jalen Hurts' Super Bowl performance a couple of years ago, where Jalen, he played great in the game. He probably should have been the Super Bowl MVP, even on a losing team a couple of years ago, because he was that good, in my opinion, in the game. But he did have the fumble that was returned for a touchdown by Kansas City in the first half. And you can say, yeah, it was the first half. It's not the end of the world, da-da-da-da-da-da. But look, if Jalen doesn't fumble that ball, and more importantly, if it's not returned for a touchdown, the Eagles probably win that Super Bowl. My opinion, take it for what it's worth, but I think they probably win that Super Bowl. So as good as Jalen was in the game, that one play really hampered the Eagles' ability subsequently. We didn't know what was going to happen after that. But subsequently, looking back, it hampered the Eagles' ability to win that Super Bowl. I think the same thing actually occurred with Lamar. So there's nothing you can really do about that other than, like Detroit, dust yourself off, pick yourself up, and try all over again. Okay, let's talk about the championship games in the NFL coming up this weekend. AFC and NFC championship games. We will take them in order. The Commanders and Eagles. Jaden Daniels has been tremendous, and I think he's been great. But I think the Eagles will win the game. You have to understand a couple things, folks. The problem with Jalen Hurts, you know, we hear about all these issues with the passing game. The problem with Jalen Hurts is that he's never going to be as consistent as you want him to be. But we all know that he has the ability to have a great game. He's a gamer. I mean, we've seen him perform. We being Philadelphia Eagles fans, we've seen him perform. On more than one occasion. Unfortunately, it hasn't happened week in, week out. But that is what it is. It's very strange, but if Kellen Moore ends up getting a job, a head coaching job, and leaves the Eagles, you are going to be faced with the reality that Jalen Hurts, a quarterback who has been to the playoffs for the last 4 years, will have had five different offensive coordinators in his six-year career. Now, folks, I want you to think about that for a second, all right? Jalen, as offensive coordinator, since he's been an NFL player, has had Doug Peterson. Doug Peterson was the head coach. He wasn't the offensive coordinator, but it was his offense that was run when Jalen was drafted. Shane Steichen, Brian Johnson, Kellen Moore, and if Kellen Moore takes a job, if he actually gets offered a job and becomes a head coach in the NFL, we will be talking about the fifth offensive coordinator in 6 years for Jalen Hurts. Folks, that is a lot to overcome. I mean, this is a guy, Jalen Hurts, who has not had the same offense more than 2 years in a row. He's only had the same offense 2 years in a row since high school. And he's in his 6 years of pro. He's only had that once. And that was his second and third year, his first and second year as a starter with Shane Steichen. And all he did was take the Philadelphia Eagles to the Super Bowl, his second year in the same offense. Think about Patrick Mahomes, 3 years in the same offense, 5 years. Think about Josh Allen. Think about Tom Brady. Think about Lamar Jackson, who've all had at least 3 years in the same offense, sometimes with multiple coordinators. You're asking Jalen Hurts to perform in the same way that these other quarterbacks perform when he has to learn a new language every single offseason. It's a lot to ask. You got to be fair. And look, I like Jalen Hurts. Is he perfect? Absolutely not. He needs to get rid of the ball. He needs to stop taking sacks. Throw the ball away. But it has not been easy, in my opinion, for him to learn a new offense every single year. It's literally wasting his young prime. And it's too bad because you're not going to get rid of Coach Sirianni, and he shouldn't lose his job because he's done what he's supposed to do, get the Eagles to the NFC Championship game. All you can ask for is a chance to go to the Super Bowl. And Coach Sirianni, through a tumultuous season at points, has gotten this team there. And all credit to him. I have nothing bad to say about Coach Sirianni. He's done a tremendous job this year, until I do have something to say that's bad about Coach Sirianni. But to this point, all kudos. He's done incredibly well with this team and with this football team. So I can't kill Jalen Hurts. I know what he's capable of. Is he going to do it this week or possibly next week in this 3 weeks from now in the Super Bowl? Who knows? But you got to win this coming week. Do you have a chance to go to the Super Bowl? And I think the Eagles will do that. Now, let's talk a little bit about the second game. Kansas City and the Buffalo Bills. I think this is going to be a tension-filled game, phrase I like to use. I think the Bills are a little beat up, but I think they have a possibility, obviously, of winning this game, even though they're on the road. I do think that it's hard for me to see, me personally, see Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid losing this game. They're on the precipice of doing something that no one has done in the Super Bowl era, which is three-peating. So I think they're going to be ready. They're going to be loaded for bear. I think they're going to show up at home and do what they have to do to win the game to get to the Super Bowl. I know a lot of people are, quote unquote, chiefed out. You know, they don't want to see any more of Kansas City winning games or competing for Super Bowl titles, this and the other. But I have to say, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing whether or not they can actually do something historic, which, again, has never been done in the Super Bowl era. It's kind of weird, but in my opinion, Tom Brady is not Patrick Mahomes' ultimate rival. Even though Brady has 7 Super Bowl titles and 10 Super Bowl appearances. To me, a better comparison for Patrick Mahomes is Michael Jordan. And I'm going to tell you why. You know, Tom Brady, he didn't start out as Tom Brady. I mean, he grew, to his credit, into that role gradually over time. But when he first started playing in the NFL, Tom Brady was just another player. He wasn't the Tom Brady he became. Now, Patrick Mahomes, he kind of hit the ground running. As soon as they let him start in Kansas City, which was the end of his rookie year, he was Patrick Mahomes and never looked back. Much like Jordan. Jordan obviously started from day one with the Bulls, but Patrick Mahomes has always been like, he was more like Peyton Manning than he was Tom Brady. Even though, again, let's be fair, Patrick Mahomes didn't start as a rookie until the last game of his rookie season. Peyton Manning started the very first game of his rookie season and never looked back. So, I mean, we got to be fair. But Patrick Mahomes put up tremendous numbers, played incredibly well from the time he started starting for Kansas City. And if he can find a way to three-peat, I think that puts him on an equal footing with Tom Brady, even though Brady has more Super Bowl wins. Because Mahomes, I think, is 29. He has several years left to do whatever he is going to do. So it's a very, very, very important set of games coming up this weekend. I think we're going to see a repeat of 2 years ago. I think we're going to see a rematch of Eagles-Chiefs in the Super Bowl. And I'll tell you what I think about who's going to win the game if that happens. But let's let them play the game first. All right, so a couple of quick things that I want to do. I got a piece of equipment for my golf game, which I think is going to help. I'm going to show it to you. Those of you watching on YouTube and other socials can see. But I will obviously tell you, for those of you listening on Spotify and Apple. I picked up the Nikon CoolPix. I'm sorry, the Nikon CoolShot Pro 2. It's a rangefinder. Look, I used all sorts of digital applications in the past. Garmin, the watches, Golf Shot, Sky Caddy I used for years. But at the end of the day, there is nothing that replaces a physical range finder. And I'm going to put this in my bag, and I can't wait to see how it performs on the golf course. Now, I use Nikon cameras for years, both digital and digital SLR cameras for years. They do a tremendous job. The picture is crystal clear on this rangefinder, and I can't wait to see how it performs on the golf course. Now, folks, I do have a question to ask you. What are you drinking tonight? Well, I can tell you what I am drinking. And in a nod to the Motor City, through all you've been through this past week, I did want to give you a little nod. I'm drinking Mayor Pingree Bourbon Whiskey. This is the red label. Folks, I'm going to give you some numbers. The Mayor Pingree Bourbon Whiskey, red label, obviously, is named for Mayor Hazen S. Pingree, who was the mayor of Detroit from 1890 to 1897. It is distilled in Michigan and Indiana. More on that later. It is bottled by Valentine Distilling Company in Ferndale, Michigan. It is 50% ABV, which makes it 100 proof. And it is 6 years old. That is the age statement. The mash bill is 75% corn, 21% rye, 4% malted barley. Now, folks, this Mayor Pingree is kind of a combination of MGP product combined out of Indiana, combined with what they distill in Michigan. That's why it's distilled in Michigan and Indiana. It's nice. It's solid. It's savory. I mean, it's not going to hurt you one way or the other. The strange thing is, even at 100 proof, you don't notice you being me. You don't notice a huge difference in flavor profile or viscosity or anything, frankly. Whether you drink it neat or whether you drink it on the rocks or with ice or with a couple drops of water, it kind of stays the same. It's interesting that way. I have to say, this is probably better as a mixer. I bought this when I was in Detroit. I don't remember how much I paid for it. I think it's probably like $48, $50, something like that. But it's definitely better as a mixer than it is neat, whether you're having it neat or on the rocks. So, one more thumb in the eye for Detroit. But, Detroit, you know I love you. I'll be back, hopefully very soon, rooting for you guys. Anyway, that is the show for tonight. Again, don't forget to like, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your enemies. We're here to provide you content whenever and wherever you may be looking for it. We're going to have another exciting show for you next week. But until then, my name is Cyrus Farmer. This is the Stomp the Tea podcast. We will be back 1 week from now. And as always, we will see you on the first tee.